Podcasting 2.0 for July 25th, 2025, episode 228, Tokenless. Hello, everybody. Oh, what's happening? We're back after a two-week hiatus, hanging out, walking through woods aimlessly, unconnected. It is time once again for Podcasting 2.0, where we find out what's really going on in podcasting. What happened? What's happening now? What is happening very soon? All the dirt, all the down, and the dirty. We are, in fact, the only boardroom that doesn't have a private meeting room at Podcast Movement. I'm Adam Curry here in the heart of the Texas Hill Country and in Alabama. The man who thinks freemium is something you clean your oven with. Say hello to my friend on the other end, the one, the only Mr. Dave Jones.
Oh, well, did you see Spurlock, what he just posted?
Just now?
Yeah, on the
social. I need to set up a trigger whenever Spurlock posts that has to text me. Because he truly is one of the main reasons I check multiple times a day. It's just to see what Spurlock.
I thought that was for me.
I'm sorry. Yes. latest July stats from Power. Is that what we're looking at? Oh, Godcaster.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, we're neck and neck with Dogcatcher.
The Godcaster and Dogcatcher.
Yeah. It's us. We have the same percentage of OP3 downloads as LinkedIn.
Did you?
I didn't even know LinkedIn did podcasts.
But hold on. We're ahead of Deezer.
Us, and we're also ahead of Chromecast device. Whatever that is.
Now, by coincidence, I listened to Power. I listened to Power on the Godcaster this morning. You did too?
Yeah. On Godcaster. You guys know. Okay. Yeah. I did not listen to it on Godcaster.
Okay, so that 0.1% was me.
Me. Yeah, it's you. It's all you.
It's all me, baby. I am 0.1%.
Yeah. If I should switch over and start using it, start listening to Power on Godcaster, and then I could bump us up to 0.2%.
Woo! Yeah. So we haven't actually made the announcement yet, and I'll just tell the backstory of that to people. First of all, I want to share a tip with everybody. A little tip, little tip of the day. If you happen to live kind of in a rural area and you have well water, like myself, and you know it does happen that the person who built the home put kind of a cheapo water softener system in, one that is basically not serviceable. So,
yes,
you know, so it's got all this, you know, all this gunk going on. And so my man, Randall, by the way, host of the Whiskey Shaman podcast.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah. Shout out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Shout out to Whiskey Shaman. He says, nah, well, I mean, you can better just get a new one. All right, let's get a new one. So he says, hey, and he says, I just got a cancellation. I can come by now. Okay, perfect. He comes by. And
10 grand.
No, not at all. No, much. Thank goodness. No. But he already came over to look at it. And so he's installing, but memo to self, when your guy, Randall, your Whiskey Shaman, when he is installing your water softener, do not poop. Because you will not have any water.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
To wash the poop down. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So it's not safe in there, babe. Don't go in there. Don't go in there.
you dropped a bomb and left it. I left it for somebody to step on.
I left a major bomb.
That's a horrible thing to do. At least, you know, you were talking, I think it was it John that was talking about, this has been a while back on NA, he was talking about the poop shelf in the toilet.
Oh, yeah, the Dutch poop shelf.
Oh, okay, it was you.
Yeah. Yeah,
the Russians have that, too.
Oh, really?
Every toilet in Moscow has a poop shelf.
Yeah, and you know the history of it, right?
I mean, the only thing I can think of is that it's so that you can check out your poop and see if there's like worms in it or something.
Yes. Early on when, the only buildings that had toilets were hospitals, but everyone else was just pooping in the canal or whatever they did back in the day.
Fun. That's fun. Yeah.
And, so the hospitals had a little shelf in there exactly for that reason. So they can, okay, let me go check and, yep. Yeah. Looks like you're good or whatever, you know, just check the poop.
And it was so bizarre to poop on a shelf.
Yeah, pooping on a shelf. And that became the main toilet maker. Just continued to make those forever. And the Dutch, I think they secretly enjoy it.
What? It makes for... When the poop does not go under the water, when it just sits on the shelf, it makes for a very stinky bathroom. It is a very odoriferous and pungent experience to be in that bathroom.
Interesting.
And I really don't want to just turn around and check it out. I mean, I'd rather just flush that thing right now.
Well, interestingly enough, you know, when I was visiting my daughter in Rotterdam, was it April, I think? And you know, I met all, and she's still be 35 in August, and all of her friends are kind of the same age, and they're the millennials, you know, they're the older millennials. They're a cool bunch. They kind of getting their lives together, starting families. And Christina says to me, dad, you got to be getting our league. So your league. Yeah. You got to get this app. It is the poop map app.
And is that for the homeless pooping on the streets?
No. You register your poop. And then what? And so you get badges and all kinds of awards. You're like, I pooped on the airplane. I got like a special award for over 10,000 feet.
True.
Yes.
This is
and,
not.
And we're in a league. And so
FIFA.
Yeah. We're in a competitive league. But the thing about it is I know my daughter's alive, you know, cause kids, they don't text you every day. I'm like, let me check in the poop app. Ah, she pooped. Okay. She's alive. So there you go. There you go.
Just goes if she ever gets constipated for a couple of weeks, you're going to be, you're like, baby, are you okay?
I mean, and they actually got a prop from like, Christina, your dad is an excellent addition to our league. It must be his radio background. Cause you know, I'm making up all kinds of, all kinds of, what is the, analogies, you know, when you poop, you have to describe it in a fun way. All right, we are, everybody. Yes.
As a DJ, you also have to learn to poop on command commercial breaks.
Either that or you're holding it. You're either pooping on command or you're holding control. It. I am, as a pilot, I mean, it's...
That too, yeah.
I'm well trained. So we've been working on the Godcaster, as everybody knows, for a long time. We can go into that in some detail because now the app is out. Here's what happened. We were about ready to go for what Paul, our app developer, calls an open beta, which basically means you put it in the app store and you say, this is beta.
Yeah, it just has the word beta in the title.
Yeah, because we had a closed beta for a while, which was cool. And of course, he's developed both for Android and iOS, and it's full on native. And here's the kicker: 100% Android Auto and CarPlay compatible. But not just, you know, like, oh, it works. No, I mean, it's awesome. I mean, everything, the tabs, you got four levels deep, you know, all kinds of amazing stuff. So it's a real automobile experience.
Yeah, Paul did a great job.
Yeah. You know, when you first fire it up, it looks for stations, and stations can be radio stations. Stations can be podcast networks that have a live stream, can be a church, a ministry, and it automatically finds those for you, and you can follow stations and then follow programs. I think it's an awesome app. But then we were kind of like, you were in the woods for a week and like, well, we definitely don't want to do anything until Dave's back. You know, because
thank you.
Like we did just because it still runs off of all of the API stuff. When I got back
and got service, my signal like synced up and it was like, you have 175 unread signal messages. I was like, oh God, I'll never be able to understand this.
Yeah. So what happened was last Sunday, was it Sunday? No, it was 10 days ago, I think. All of a sudden I get a message from Glenn Beck like, hey, Adam, it's been 2 years. Can you come on? Can you come on the 29th, which I'm going to be in Florida, by the way, no board meeting next week. Sorry. And that'll be it though for the rest of the year. Or the 22nd, which, you know, was literally a few days away. I'm like, oh man, yeah. I can't believe this. What an opportunity to talk about the Godcaster. The app's not ready. I ping Paul. He's like, no, it's ready. It's good. We can do it. I can just press the button. We're good to go.
Shoo.
Shoo. Yeah, exactly. And so I still was like, nope, we're waiting for Dave to come back. Dave has to give a thumbs up. We're not doing anything. But it worked out. It worked out real nice. And I think that
is that episode out yet?
Yeah, for Blaze subscribers, it's out. I think on the RSS, as the producer told me, it'll be RSS and everywhere on Saturday. I kind of liked how she said that. It'll be RSS and everywhere, which I think means YouTube. Cool.
Yeah.
YouTube.
Oh yeah,
yeah. RSS and everywhere, and they release audio and video versions, and. I guess some people are already watching. Cause he brought Beck brought it up within 10 minutes. I'm like, oh, really? Okay. Yeah. I said, okay, let's dive in, shall we? So we were just looking for, we just want a sizable group for the open beta test. So that should probably work. I'm hoping.
Freemium? What do you mean, Z Brooklyn? It's not freemium. You don't have to pay for anything.
No, there's no freemium. Yeah, I should explain. Yeah. The app is completely free. No algos, no ads, no inserts, no banners flying everywhere. What this app does is it's a place for radio stations to use the Godcaster backend, which means they can put their podcasts and their live over-the-air streams into a single place. People aren't leaving their radio stations. It's basically, I look at it this way. We give everyone who wants to be in the Godcaster, they get a customized podcast player, a podcast app that they control. It's very much like the Rachel Maddow thing that we talked about a long time ago, where, you know, have an opinion of your collection. And so people follow the station. They automatically follow the shows that are in there. And then we added this one cool thing, which is, you load up your digital station with podcasts, and then you click turn this into a stream, and it turns into a live stream. And when you're listening to it in the Godcaster app, you know, if you check the stream, they'll just pop in somewhere. It's that serendipity that we were talking about with what's our buddy's name there from
Tommy. Tom Webster.
Tom Webster. Yeah. So it's exactly that. It's the serendipity of just hitting different channels. Oh, what's this? Oh, that's interesting. And then if you want to listen to the podcast, that episode or more, you just hit details. It says view program, and it takes you right from the live stream to the episodes, and you can start it over there. You can add it to your queue. You can listen to a different one. And all of this is passed through. So everything downloads still go directly to the host and everything. As you can see, it shows up as Godcaster with 0.1%.
Yeah, it's a different kind of podcast app. It's you, because the whole point of Godcaster as a product is to keep the radio station as the center of the universe. And it's to help. I mean, our goal is to help radio stations and churches too, or whoever else wants to do anything. But it's primarily, you know, radio stations and ministries and stuff to make the digital transition to podcast on demand first. But it still drives everything back to the station. So the station is still sort of the center of the universe. So it's not whereas like in the iHeart app or something like that, you know, that's a radio that has a radio centric feel to it. But as soon as you tap on some show, you're gone. The station is lost.
Right.
You have no idea that, like, you could enter the iHeart app through your local radio station, but pretty quickly you're just out of that now, and you don't have any connection back to that station. So they really don't get any benefit out of it, you know? So that's really kind of where the focus was.
And it gives radio stations the opportunity to promote content they don't have on their over-the-air stream. In fact, there's one station who they don't run Chip Ingram over the air, but they have him in their Godcaster. And the Chip Ingram people love it. And of course, we have, I think the two important things to mention, because we have a controlled environment, so we track plays and all of this stuff. So someone who's running a Godcaster station, they can really make choices based upon actual information. And along with that, we surface the funding tag. This is probably one of the first podcast-oriented apps that really has big donate buttons everywhere, which, by the way, adheres to the full standard. So if you put in your funding tag, support the show, the button changes to support the show. And then you tap that, and then it takes you, it pops you out to the donation page for that program or the station. And the cool thing is that the station, they get a tick in their dashboard knowing that someone clicked on the funding tag for a different program. And the program producers, they can also, we're still, we haven't opened that up fully yet. They can get their own producer login and they can see exactly what stations, they get stats for all the stations they're on, and they have all the referral codes. They know exactly where donations came from which station, because in Christian radio, and this flows through to, this will flow through to churches and ministries, having a revenue share deal is very normal. I mean, this goes on all the time. So you put X program on your station. If they get a donation, they're supposed to say, hey, we got a donation. It came from your station. Here's 20% or whatever the deal is, which I think is a really cool model. Of course, it's been broken for 40 years because the only way the program producer knows is if someone actually checked the box. Yeah, I heard you on KHCB, or yeah, worse,
or someone, an interview.
Yeah. Yeah, if someone calls and donates over the phone, like sometimes they forget to ask, where'd you hear about us? So yeah. Now that's all digitally managed, and that's like, you know, it's blowing people's minds. Like, well, it wasn't all that hard to fix. So the funding tag is just front and center, along with the lit tag, because you can also follow the station with an RSS feed in your own podcast app if you want. Everything flows right through. I mean, we really put podcasting 2.0 to work in this, and there's still a lot to do, obviously. Yeah. You know, it's just tons and tons of stuff to do, but we're also, yeah, you know, we got live clients at the same time. So it's like walking a mm-hmm. high wire all the time.
And we push everything out to other podcast apps as well. So if, you know, somebody wants to listen in, True Fans or, you know, Castomatic or Fountain or whatever, all that works too. So
yeah, we basically give the station an RSS feed.
Yeah.
For the station that includes the most recent episode of every podcast they have in there, plus their live feed. And it's really cool when you show it to people, like, oh, look, here it is in Podcast Guru, Podcast Addict, Fountain, mm-hmm. what? True Fans, what? How does that work? What? Yeah. Oh, yeah, you can do
some
that.
Of these stations have their own apps too, and it works in there. It's just, it's just part of that whole philosophy of podcasting is of be everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, the content needs to be everywhere. I don't know where you're headed, but this fits in really well with what I was, I had sort of a thing that I wanted to talk about today, but then at the last minute I heard power this morning and I kind of really changed to, I felt like I wanted to talk about NPR and kind of public broadcasting.
Well, you do you, boo. You do you, boo.
I mean, it's part of like so much has happened since while I was in the forest.
Funny thing happened while I was in the forest.
I came back and Stephen Colbert had been
was
canceled.
Off the air.
NPR lost its funding, and it was like,
and podcasting just got a little bit better.
I mean, this kind of all fit. We're talking about the radio, radio centric nature of everything, and radio stations making the digital transition, which I feel like they just didn't ever fully grasp how to do in a way that didn't hurt them, their traditional like revenue model. I feel I'm not the expert on that topic, but the conversation we had with Rocky was very interesting around, you know, what their trepidation with digital and with internet streaming based on how they got screwed by Mark Cuban and other people in the early days, who just kind of like used them to make a fortune themselves and discarded them, you know, to a dustbin.
Yes. But,
I mean, like the first few minutes of this week's Pod News Weekly Review, like I said, I had a whole set of topics I want to talk about, but like after hearing those first few minutes, I was like, no, it just gave me so many thoughts about this topic.
Okay.
And I mean, it, so I guess NPR is is so important to podcasting because they were so early. Mm-hmm. And
they were one of the first ones to pop up. I mean, I think it was even before we called it podcasting, they were already sniffing around. They were there very early.
What's your buddy over there at WGBH that
Tony really Khan? Tony Khan.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
And so, I mean, it's like there's multiple things. The death of traditional mainstream, whatever you want to call it, mainstream media, whether it's, you know, TV or cable or radio. I mean, that's been predicted forever. But so often is the case with predictions like this, it may ultimately come to pass, but it takes a lot longer than you think it will.
Yeah, this is why I'm not a billionaire, because I always come up with great ideas at least 10 years too early. And then someone else goes off and makes money on it. How did Joe Rogan get $200-$300 million and I got nothing?
You're not getting your royalty check from podcasting?
No.
So radio and TV and they're just sort of they're dying so slowly.
Yeah, well, it's a very slow burn.
Yeah, and so PBS, I don't know, this thing about NPR getting their funding cut, they mentioned it a little bit. They were mostly focused on the BBC and Spain public, mm-hmm. Public media. Mm-hmm. But, you know, NPR is really Corporation for Public Broadcasting lost its federal funding, which flows to PBS and NPR through the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And I just wanted to kind of like visit this topic for a second, because I hear constant misunderstanding about the way the money flow works and
mm-hmm,
all this.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And everybody has a different version of what ultimately is not how this works. So PBS said that money that they lost made up about 20% of their revenue. That's a big deal for PBS. But, you know, underwriters and donations, I guess they make up 80%. So there's 20%. They can survive that. I mean, underwriters are advertisers, and if they do some content and programming changes to try to attract new audiences and that kind of thing, they can survive a 20% cut.
Just to set one thing kind of straight in the beginning, PBS mm-hmm. purchases a lot of that programming from commercial production companies, as does NPR.
Yes, yes.
So it's not right. Like them, you know, so often, and a lot of it, PBS is a lot of military industrial complex, you know, like Boeing and Archer Daniel Midland Company and you know,
Raytheon.
Not really like consumer oriented. They know exactly what their audience is, and they're, if anything, it's virtue signaling. But still, and with NPR, it's even more prevalent how the money flows, because the local stations actually have to buy the national programming through NPR, and you know, so it's very convoluted.
Yeah, and that's the real flow. So, you know, PBS can survive the 20% cut. NPR is going to be more affected. They're going to get the bigger hit from this, because most, like you said, most the money flow is that most of that money from the government goes to the member stations, which then turn around and buy the content from the NPR mothership.
Yeah,
and so the money does end up at the NPR mothership. It just goes through a circuitous route to get there. So less money to the member stations means less money to purchase the content, which ultimately means less money to NPR mothership. So that's how they get hurt out of this.
There is one other thing. NPR pays an exorbitant amount of money. I forget how much, but it's millions a year to deliver the programming to the NPR stations via satellite.
That is such a waste of money.
Yeah. Yes.
Knowing the way government operates, and not just government, but government and nonprofits and NGOs, and knowing the way that whole thing is put together, there's probably a couple of people who have contracts to deliver that through this old satellite system, and they've been getting paid all this money for all these years, and you don't want to upset the apple cart.
No, a lot of people. It's gravy train.
Yeah, it's the grandson, the owner of whatever this delivery network is, the grandson of some senator or something. You never know how this stuff works, but it got me thinking. You know, so the point of public broadcasting, like what is the actual point? So that meaning tax funded broadcasting. And at least in the U.S., this is governed by the Public Broadcasting Act of 1967, which established the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. NPR was created a few years later, but by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And reading from that act, the goals of doing that, of establishing this nonprofit Corporation for Public Broadcasting that would receive tax dollars, the goals were things like this, quote, "It is in the public interest to encourage the growth and development of public radio and television, including the use of such media for instructional, education, and cultural purposes." Another quote is, this is from the act itself. It says, "to constitute an expression of diversity and excellence." You know, so the public broadcasting gets a hit from, you know, super right-wing people for being, you know, lefty and that kind of thing. But a lot of what their programming is actually in keeping with their mandate. Another quote is, "It is in the public interest to encourage the development of programming that involves creative risks and that addresses the needs of unserved and underserved audiences, particularly children and minorities." So that's in the bill that created them.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of their programming is doing that. So they are being true to their mission statement as given to them by Congress. That's not really a problem. The problem has come in with the prohibitions that were also in that act. And so, for instance, this one, it says, quote, "The corporation may not contribute to or otherwise support any political party or candidate for elective public office," unquote.
Right.
Now, you can
support someone without supporting someone.
Yes. Right.
Absolutely.
And you see that done, and you see that done every week from pulpits and churches.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people make statements that don't, you know, because churches are also, because they're tax exempt.
Do you know that the IRS just released a statement about it's called the Johnson Amendment. President Johnson added an amendment to the IRS law, and that was, I don't know, that must have been early 60s. That no 501c3 nonprofit can, that's why you have 501c4s, because that's a lobbying nonprofit, which is not tax deductible. But the 501c3s, which most churches are, they cannot favor any political candidate. And the IRS mm-hmm. just issued an opinion, and they said this will no longer hold true for houses of worship, because it is the same as talking about politics inside your family. Now, how that works with podcasts by pastors and stuff like that, I don't know.
Right.
You know, or when they stream a service live, I think that's kind of questionable. But that was just like 2 weeks ago. That was an opinion the IRS released.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah, that's when, you know, the way churches have gotten around that forever, that ambiguity there is by, you know, you make statements from your sermon or whatever, and you don't mention a particular candidate or that kind of thing, but you,
You said,
you mentioned all the things around it.
I'm voting red, if you know what I mean. Wink, wink, yeah, wink, exactly. Wink, nudge, nudge. Yes, right.
Exactly.
I'm just saying, make America great again.
Yeah. It's like, or, you know, like, if it's a, you know, more of a left-leaning church, you miss like, we're with her.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
Quote. You know, like,
by the way, during the 2024 election, Black churches, man, they were just all out. Vote for Kamala. They were just saying it flat out.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty crazy. Like, okay.
But so, you know, NPR, we've played clips of On the Media, you know, which is a NPR show. We've played clips of them where they just flat out say Trump, you know, Trump's a fascist. We keep telling people this, but they won't listen to us.
That's right. Literally, that's what they said. They won't listen. Yeah. Well, we're no good.
Yeah. So this is the problem is not with their following their mandate, which they mostly do. The problem is that they've gone so far against the prohibitions, and they're just basically that it's, there's another one in here that says, quote, strict adherence to objectivity and balance in all programs or series of programs of a controversial nature, unquote. You know, and that's just not the case anymore. And I don't actually, I don't have a problem with the leftness or rightness of any particular broadcaster, including NPR and PBS. Like it's, I'm sort of immune to it. I don't listen to those things anyway. Mostly I used to listen to a lot of NPR when I was younger, but I find it kind of boring these days. So I don't listen to it anymore, but, I don't really have a problem with the left right of all this. Because I think the leftward trend of NPR and PBS is really just more of a general trend that follow it. So it follows the education and income brackets. The more money and the more education a person has, the more likely they are to be left on the left side of the political spectrum. And so, you know, and why that is a question that people like Thomas Frank, you can read his books, they've contributed to answering. It's a hard question. It's multifaceted, you know, factorial, but it really, that trend started under the Bill Clinton years, and it's just increased exponentially since then. But much of NPR and member stations are tied to Washington, D.C., and those are the wealthiest zip codes in the country, and universities. Our local NPR station is UAB University here in Birmingham, the University of Alabama, Birmingham. It's housed on their campus. So yeah, there's your answer. It's an organic thing. NPR and PBS trended left because their staff and their listeners trended more towards educated and high income.
So this is what it's not a new term, but it's audience capture. And I've dealt with this for over 17 years. Whenever Dvorak and I disagreed with general opinion, my timeline fills up with, I'm unsubscribing, I'm no longer donating, this is no good, blah, blah. And we're just like, oh, fine, you know, if we don't get enough donations, we'll go do something else. That's always been our take. So we had alternative opinions during COVID. We had alternative opinions about Ukraine. We have definitely had alternative opinions about who runs who, America, Israel, or Israel, America. And the amount of hate and anger and threats that I can, and I see why it's so easy for many podcasters in particular to go, oh crap. Well, my audience doesn't like that. So I must be wrong, or, you know, and I think that's the same with all media. You're in a milieu and that's what you're identifying. You're in you're literally on campus. So you're going to be in a milieu. But it's very, very tough to stand up and say, no, I just have a different opinion. And this is my opinion. If you don't like it, then don't listen or don't donate or whatever. That's fine. Yeah. You're not hurting me. You think you are, but you're not, which is why I have a donation model and not advertising, because advertisers would have gone away immediately.
Yeah. I mean, the NPR mothership is in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. and it's very, Washington, D.C. is a place of extreme wealth. And so you're going to get a trend towards a trend left. And in the universities, which many NPR member stations, you know, are on university campuses or started that way, the university professors and university staff are also very well paid, and that's and highly educated. So that's also another trend towards the left. It's just not, it happened organically. It's an organic process. You could have almost predicted it based on, you know, just seeing where history was going. So it's not surprising. And it's honestly not even that big of a deal, except here's where I kind of hit, you know, here's where it hits me, here's where my mind went. I don't think the problem is with a certain political bias. The problem I see is that being publicly funded with tax dollars did not keep that political skew from happening. So what's the point? See, you know, because the idea here is that, okay, we're going to publicly fund this media with tax dollars. And that's going to allow, I'm speaking as the government here, that's going to allow us to dictate to this organization that they're not allowed to show political bias. But that did not work. And so if the receiving of tax dollars through congressional dictate, if that does not keep the bias from happening, then they're really no different from any other non-tax funded organization. And at that point, why give them tax money? See, because there's only one argument for giving them tax money is that you can establish guardrails of fairness and balance. And if that doesn't effectuate in reality, then there's no reason to have a tax funded organization like that. So, you know, what I'm saying is you can have two entities, Fox News and NPR, that both skew hard to the left or the right. One gets tax money and the other doesn't. So the presence or lack of tax money as a balancing agent doesn't work.
I have only one real problem with NPR, and this hit me 4 years ago, and it hit me just 3 weeks ago. We had a devastating flood here in the Hill Country, 20 minutes south of me. The only reason we weren't affected is because we're at a higher elevation. Comfort, Kerrville, Hunt, Center Point. I mean, everyone has seen the images. By the way, it's like the Grand Canyon. Unless you've actually been there, you don't understand how vast that is. Yeah. And for all this noise, radio has, I've been a radio guy since I was 13 years old and built my first radio transmitter. Radio is inherently a local medium. When this hit and you turned on KTXI 90.1, Hill Country's NPR station, during this tragedy, what did you hear? This is Fresh Air with Terry Gross. Yeah, that made me so mad. Or, hey, everybody, it's time for Marketplace. I was like, what in the world? And, you know, so I was running spots on Hello Fred, you know, all kind. It was useless. The rock station, KRV, I think, my buddy Cody over there, he'd stopped this whole morning show and wasn't playing music and was just trying to coordinate stuff on the air. You know, and that's a very small, very niche rock station in Kerrville. But NPR, mm-hmm. our national treasure, no. There was no one there. They didn't know what to do. They had no procedure for all this noise about, oh, what are you doing in emergency? No, none of that. And that was the same 4 years ago with Snowmageddon in Austin. In fact, it was Fresh Air. That was the same show that was running when electricity was out for days and we sat in our cars trying to get some information.
I want some fresh water.
And it was, you know, literally the top 40 station, the weather guy was doing all kinds of updates and reports. And
yeah.
And I guess that kind of flows into what is the point anymore? What is the point of radio, which is going back to the beginning, which is why we've built something that we believe transitions radio to the digital realm, which is no longer bound by terrestrial lines. You know, Starlink.
Yes.
One of the No Agenda guys, he organized a meetup last Saturday here in town. I'm like, what are you doing? Oh, I'm here for flood relief. I said, what are you doing? So I talked to the guy. He has a nonprofit. It's called Disaster Lab Tech, disasterlabtech.org. And he says, so he's funded by donors and tech companies, give him gear. He goes in. So he literally flew in from Holland, from the south of Holland, flew in, brought in, he has flight cases, the whole deal. He sets up a Wi-Fi mesh network with a Starlink, multiple Starlink satellite dishes, and just sets up communications for everybody. QR code, boom, you're online, you're connected. Everybody can talk. They've got IP-based radios, and they leave it there. They don't take it back. They leave it. They leave all the tech there. That's what I'm talking about. That's useful.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, so I guess I'm actually heading somewhere with this, and that is that I think NPR, I think I got ways that I want to, that this is heading in my mind. NPR, I think they made a terrible mistake. When they canceled, they gutted the wrong people. They got rid of their podcasting group.
Yep.
Or didn't get rid of them, but they just gutted that whole,
Whole group. Pretty much.
Man,
they killed the future. They killed the future.
They did.
Yeah.
They killed the future to preserve a declining business. And they should have done the exact opposite.
Yep.
They should have
doubled down. They should have doubled down. Yep.
And converted into a podcast first organization who also took some of that content and stuck it on broadcast radio for the member stations that they had. I'm actually hopeful about this whole thing. I think do you know those people that say, like they own a successful business and they say, you know, I should have quit my job. I got fired and then I started this business and now it's successful and I should have done this 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It felt horrible at the time to get fired. I thought I was really scared. I thought everything was going to be awful, but in retrospect, it was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Yeah.
I think that could be the same thing here. I think this could be a really good thing for these member stations to disconnect them from their extreme dependence on the mothership, let them do their thing and build up their local donation base and their local programming even more than it already is, and connect. And then the mothership should double down on podcast content, do some sort of rev share with the member stations. They need to blow up this whole model and rethink this thing from the ground up with a digital first strategy.
And when it comes to digital first strategy, this was the problem. They had shows with 50 people working on the show. You know,
that didn't make any money. Yeah.
That didn't make any money. And the blueprint is there. Use your audience, involve your audience, make your audience your producers. The blueprint is there. They approach it from an elite position. like, well, you know, we know how to do this. And, you know, it's like, no, it doesn't work that way. If Dvorak and I, if we had, even if we had an editor, like, oh, well, you should edit the show because we can't do that. We wouldn't be able to make it.
Yeah.
It's like, no, we can't hire another person. So we've got to do it ourselves. And what we did is we outsourced it to the audience and said, congratulations, you're now all producers. You contribute time, talent, or treasure. Lots of people have no time or talent. They want to contribute. Like, I'll write a check. Turns out a lot of people like doing that. But man, the boots on the ground from every vocation, every type of person, every situation, it has been the success of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what NPR should look at. But they're stuck, you know. And by the way, Terry Gross making, you know, $300,000 just for that one show. It's public information.
This financial shakeup may unstick them, you know, and that's what I'm hopeful for. But because NPR gets a bad rap for being stuck in the past, and in a lot of ways, I think they're not so much stuck in the past as they're shackled to their funding model.
Yeah,
they could not figure out a way to get out of it, and now they can. They have freedom now. That they didn't have before.
Good luck.
I mean, they've obviously got they have talented people there.
Mm-hmm.
They have many talented people there. They have forward looking people there. I mean, that we've talked to about podcasting stuff in the past privately.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They have a lot of people there that are, And they were one of the earliest adopters of podcasting. They are actually very forward looking and talented. They just, when somebody gets tied to Washington the way they were, it really corrupts the process. It slows you down to where you are stuck. They're stuck in 1967. PBS is the one that I really want to talk about. I think I've changed my mind on HLS video and podcasting. I mean, I was, I wanted this thing to work. But actually, I think now that I think about it, I think it's actually imperative that we try to get this thing to work in podcast apps and on the hosting side.
Explain.
So, I think it was some stuff Sam was saying on Power that made me, that just kind of hit me, is things like video-based public broadcasting, that needs a place to land. And it's going, and traditional linear television is going to die. I mean, whether it's 20 years from now, 5 years from now, I don't know. But it is heading off a cliff. And I think there's only two places that it lands.
YouTube
or podcast.
Yeah. Amen to that. This is very deep. I hadn't actually thought about it that way. It would require them to see the light, obviously. Mm-hmm. It would really boost the whole ecosystem to an enormous degree. In fact, I would say I'd like to now get a senator or a representative to start introducing bills to refund public media, decentralized. Sorry, Sam, let's not do freemium, because that's where it's going. That's where the NPR and PBS and other public broadcasters, as we clearly see with BBC and other public broadcasters around the world, they're moving towards subscription, freemium. It's the wrong direction, in my humble opinion. If you want to spend tax dollars, build out the infrastructure, spend it in a commercial manner so that PBS, as an example, can actually subsidize the infrastructure, decentralized infrastructure,
Not, don't centralize. Don't try to be the boss of everything. You know, but all of this, well, we're going to block that app because they're making money off of us because they make $3.99 a month from us, from someone who buys a premium version of the app. Hooey. Hooey, I say. Hooey, I say. This would be a very good use of taxpayer money. And it would benefit, yeah, not just America, it would benefit the world, really. But they're all so stuck in, got to make money, got to monetize, got to get ads, got to do this, got to that, blah, 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 blah. You know, the content is almost secondary at this point to many of these people. And it's because of their own salaries. I get it. 300 grand is great. I don't want to rock that boat.
Yeah, I mean, the NPR, don't the like Morning Edition people, don't they make like $500,000 a year or something like that?
Yeah, 400,000 each.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of, you don't want to upset that apple cart if you're the one getting that paycheck.
Nope.
But everybody downstream, the staff downstream from that, they're not getting paid those kind of bucks. So they will be willing to make these transitions. And, you know, just, and you look at, and that's kind of what I was bringing up, Stephen Colbert. You know, the quote unquote, the talent that gets paid the big bucks, they're not sacred. They can go away as well.
Mm-hmm.
When the format is unprofitable and it no longer makes sense to have the content there and to pay for it when you're losing money, the people at the top that make a lot of money have to adjust down or go figure out something else to do. And that leaves an entire staff there with the ability to pivot. And I think we can just, you know, this, I think we just have to make sure this stuff doesn't land on YouTube.
Mm.
I mean, it may ultimately land some of it there, but I just feel like if WNYC, they should be able to contract with Buzzsprout for their video delivery. Or WGBH should mm-hmm. be able to, like, what if, the, you know, the, okay, they maybe they choose RSS.com. TPT in Minnesota, public broadcasting, maybe they go with Blueberry or Transistor. I just think we should be ready for a situation where we have public media and actually, and other entities too, but a lot of them are going to want to do it themselves, but public media to contract out with podcasts delivery companies to deliver their video. I mean, because they've already, public media, they know podcasting.
Mm-hmm.
They've built a continent.
Well, see, and, inside and, the and podcast. I love you for being an idealist. I'm the more pirate guy. I'm like, screw it. We're going to do it ourselves. And mm-hmm. and my vision for local radio is churches. They already got that antenna on it, that mm-hmm. dipole and a vertical antenna.
The dipole.
they got a dipole on the roof.
That's funny.
And I'm like, you know, this is how you speak into your local community. And by the way, value for value-based business. Mm-hmm. I spoke this past Wednesday. I spoke, I think it was like 45 early 20-year-olds at the Patriot Academy here in Fredericksburg. Do you know about the Patriot Academy?
No, never heard of it.
Well, from the outside, it looks like that's where you go to turn your kid into a Christian nationalist militia.
Okay. Do they have flyers that they drop from helicopters?
But in reality, they've on the inside, they've got a 90-acre campus. It's all nonprofit, so it's all funded by community. They've been around for 20 years. They've been doing this, but now they finally have a campus for the first time in their history, and it's in Fredericksburg. And so kids who are on a gap year or right out of college, you go in and it's they have tiny homes. Everybody stays on campus. And they've rebuilt the houses of Congress and the Senate. And so they teach these young people how to write a bill.
How
to get it into committee, how to get it out of committee, how to argue it. And they have, you know, all kinds of speakers coming in. And so Rick Green, who runs it, he said, would you come and speak? I said, okay. And I wasn't quite sure. I'm like, all right, I'll just tell my history of media to these 20-year-olds. And I realized pretty quickly that 95% of all of my
cultural pop references went way over their head.
Like, oh, yeah. They don't know who Chevy Chase is anymore.
Elvis Presley. Don't know who Elvis Presley is. But when I got to the media part for them, and, you know, I was able to entertain them. I've got enough stories. You know, they do remember some people.
Yeah, you just told them about the poop out.
I just said I was on Joe Rogan. Oh, okay. Yeah, we know. Now we know who you are. When I got to the media part and I explained algos, and they all know algos. They get it. They understand it, how you have to feed it to make it work. And then I started talking about art. None of them had heard of RSS. No idea. And so I went through kind of a top line summary, explained it. And I said, you know, ultimately, this is going to cost you about $15 to $20 a month. But that will save you in everything you do from that moment on. Because you control it. It is your signal, your transmitter. And, you know, and went through the, you know, the most powerful sentence in broadcasting is wherever you get your podcast. How does that work? Why is this important? Mm-hmm. And of all the stories I told, and I had a lot of stories, man, they lined up at the end of this to talk about RSS.
Really?
Like, oh, yeah. But they're like, oh, this great. This seems really important. Mr. Curry is so weird when people say, Mr. Curry, Mr. Curry, Mr.
That's,
Curry.
That's my dad.
I know. It's like, oh, okay, flinch. And value for value, they love that. Like, really? You can do that? And I told my story, you know, my no agenda story, how we started implementing that and came up with the phrase. And, you know, I was so positive about that. Because they all have an Instagram, a TikTok, a YouTube channel, and all the things I was saying, like, yeah, no, I know. It's like, if I don't upload something, then, you know, I go down, and, you know, it's all about the likes and the clicks. And then the light bulb really goes on when you say, you know, you can just do a podcast about your school team, about, you know, things happening in your town. And people in your town will support you if you ask them. Mm-hmm. And so I was very encouraged by that. And so for me, that's, I have no patience for these people. You know, the PBSs, NPRs, and I just have no patience for them. I want the excited 20-year-old who just wants to get going, do something, is excited about it. And they, and quite frankly, enough of the boomers, me, I've given into it now, 1964. Okay. I was the face of Generation X, but call me a boomer. We don't really have where's the next generation of podcasters? Where are they? Where's the 20-year-olds? Okay, we have the millennial media offensive, but they're millennials. Where is this next generation? That's who we need to be speaking to. That's who we need to get into this. Otherwise, everything's doomed.
Yeah, the age issue came, you know, it just comes up a lot. Well, you know, traditional television is, you know, like, let's just say television. Traditional television is like a bunch of old people that watch. And that's actually not the case. I mean,
well, the numbers say that's true, Dave. The numbers true.
No, I didn't mean it. I misspoke. What I'm saying is, it is the case that that linear media is watched by older people, but the content is not only older people.
Correct.
So, like, the most popular content on all the streaming media platforms are like Seinfeld and The Office.
Mm-hmm.
And these shows that are like 10, 15, 20 years old.
30 years old.
30 years old. And so it's the content and that's the problem with a lot of what public media became is it's boring.
It's always the content, always the content.
It has to stop being boring. Think back, like, you know, I think back to the public media, the content that I really liked and in the past and stuck with me, things like Ken Burns documentaries, Car Talk, Cosmos. I mean, like, these were good programs, but all that stuff's gone.
Mm.
They don't have that stuff anymore, and it's just boring. You turn on an NPR member station on Sunday morning, and it's like it's that game show. The wait, don't tell me.
Yeah.
Nobody, it's boring. Nobody cares about that. Nobody's going to listen to that. They've got to get the content back to be king. And if you do that and folk and start pushing it out over podcasts where you can get it everywhere, and just forget the whole, let the member stations can take care of themselves. They need to go and address that whole market, and they're going through the same growing pain as growing pains that Christian radio is. They're trying to find out how to survive and reinvent themselves into a digital first medium. Mm-hmm. And they're going to have to do that on their own. They can, NPR cannot do that for them. It's just, they can't. And so I think this whole thing, yes, the age thing is an issue, but it's only an issue on the medium. If these public media people transition to we're going to be podcast first, we're going to be digital first, and then, you know, what, and then the member stations can, you know, redesign their profile based on that. I think they can survive, and I think they'll be better for it.
Do you hear this? Do you hear that?
Yeah.
That's you speaking into the wind.
I know. But I don't think they'll have a choice, though. You know, I mean, NPR PBS is going to survive longer, but NPR, this was a death blow. This is a hard one. They are going to have to reorganize to survive. You know, and a lot, that's like getting fired from your job.
Yes.
You got to figure out what comes next.
What do you do next? Exactly right.
Yeah. Anyway, I just think it was an important topic because NPR actually is very important to podcasting. And, you know, they for a long time, they were 50% of what podcasting was NPR shows.
They were the first ones on the homepage of Apple and iTunes when it started.
Yeah. And I want to see them make this transition successfully, because I think in the process, having to face reality financially means they will naturally rebalance the other things that are causing them trouble, like bias and all these other issues. I think when you have to live in the real world, you don't get to ignore your audience anymore.
Well, so I'm in agreement with you that HLS video would be great, and I will support the idea. I wish we could put a lot more focus into lit and funding and location.
I think we can do it all at once.
Well, dev cycles.
I don't think it has to be one or the other.
Dev cycles at hosting companies are a scarcity, you know.
Well, the good thing is most of the hosting companies already have a fund. You know, they already support the funding tag.
That's true. That's true.
You know, and so, you know, between lit and HLS can go hand in hand.
I was, you know this, but I was asked to do a keynote at NRB in February, the National mm-hmm. Religious Broadcasters Conference.
Yep.
And I'm going to go completely lit. I'm going to go lit, funding, the whole thing. I'm just going to lay it all out there and tell them they're dying.
Adam's talk was lit.
And again,
so you're dead. You're dead to me.
Just think about it. Think about, forget about it. I mean, it's get rid of the transmitters. You can pay your host the $300,000 a year. Get rid of the transmitters. Wake up.
How much it costs per year for a transmitter? $300,000.
You know, that's a good question. Well, first of all, AM or FM makes a big difference. So let's say, what is the cost to run a 100,000 watt FM station transmitter? I mean, who knows if I'll get an answer here, but you never know. It could come out of, okay, about, well, of course, you have to have your tower, your infrastructure, your licensing, all that, but it seems like 20 grand a month in power alone. Seems about right. Yeah, seems about right. Yeah.
Yikes.
And that, you know, that doesn't include maintenance and all this stuff. And there's a lot goes into, and that's FM. AM, man, you're burning diesel. Let me see. What is a AM station?
Is digital radio, is that any cheaper or is it roughly the same?
Digital, what do you mean digital radio? But you like
DAB and stuff.
DAB, well, but DAB has no reach in America.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, if like, what was the, was it HD radio and all that?
Yeah.
Is that the same?
Well, you just run it, you just run it on a sideband of your existing signal.
Okay, I guess.
So, I mean, obviously there's equipment cost, but that failed in America. Yeah. And it's just so obvious. Look at the room. Look at the room there is. I mean, people are only listening. What was the stat? It's pretty low. Like below 30% are listening to audio in the car that is not radio.
Mm.
You know, there's your room to grow. 70% more to go. You know, just give people a reason. You know, it's all about the content. No Agenda is not on Spotify. Hasn't heard us. You know, people just use a different app. Oh, those guys, I want to hear them, but I'll have to use a different app because Spotify doesn't do it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's got to be a podcast first. It's just a podcast first future.
I said,
it has to be.
I said on Beck, I said, because he was talking about AI, and well, right up my alley, but I spanked him on that. Get over my knee, Glenn Beck. I'm gonna spank your bottom, boy. His eyes got all wide. I'm like, no. I said, really, leave the smartphone out of it. But the two most important technologies of the past 20 years is RSS and Bitcoin, and they're both owned by no one. They're universally deployed. They work. They're unstoppable. And they're inherently not sexy. So,
it's old, boring technology.
Old, boring technology for very non-boring content.
Yep.
That's exactly right.
We got a couple of notes. We got some feedback.
Oh, feedback.
Yeah. Dreb.
Was there money attached to it? Like a boostagram, or was it just feedback?
Just feedback.
Oh, okay.
Dreb said that OP3, that the OP3.dev IP address is getting blocked by some corporate firewalls.
Yeah, Palo Alto, I think.
Yeah, that's no good.
No. Well, typically, these are things that come, you know, someone will load in a new blacklist. We've had this. I've had this happen so many times. And most of these blacklists, you can go in and you can say, hey, you know, we're not a spam outfit. Here's what we're doing. And it will remove you. Some auto remove if you just go up, show up and say, hey, this is not true. This is an ongoing problem. No Agenda gets blocked on all kinds of corporate firewalls for, what is the term they use? Extremist views. Yeah.
Oh, Nathan just posted on the Mastodon that Radiotopia, that's PRX, they've implemented his podcast follow tag.
Ooh, very cool.
That's not even a formalized tag yet.
Now, what was the company that had just switched to funding?
Well, that's public media. I mean, that's what I'm saying. They're well, that's hungry.
That's the public media exchange.
Yeah, but they're the same. They're in the same circles. I mean, they're hungry.
Yeah,
I think there's people there at these organizations that are hungry to do these things.
Yes. Well, when the hosts get hungry, then things will change.
Well, they're not going to be hungry because they make a lot of money. They're not. They're by definition not hungry.
Hunger is the mother of all invention, or is it something else?
Hunger requires not lots of money.
Definitely helps.
This is really cool. I guess we got to formalize the tag now that somebody's actually using it.
Go for it. Now, do you want to talk about any of these? What is it? The L402, or there was another. There was a whole conversation about podcast OAuth endpoints. Have you seen that GitHub entry?
I created a repo for the secure RSS L402 stuff this morning.
Daniel Matthews put this in. He's from
where is this? Is there a link for this?
I can give it to you real quick right now. It's a discussion.
Yeah, you're right, Nathan. Andrew over at PRX, you're right. They are on the ball. They got stuff coming too. I'm excited about what they can get done.
I'm optimistically skeptical.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Let's see. Exclusive episodes on the RSS feed.
And the reason I ask is because this was you're not on that WhatsApp group. There's a whole conversation about it, but even about L402. You know, not everybody's on board with that. L402 failed for me. I was trying to subscribe. I became a subscriber of This Week in Bitcoin, mainly because, you know, it's the fountain hosting round robin. And I like Chris, and I like his podcast. And so I said, I'm just testing something. I'm doing he did a freemium episode of 1 minute and 20 seconds. And said, now, if you subscribe, then you can get this bonus content. I'm like, okay, I'll go for your bonus content. But then it failed and I got some kind of error. I'm not sure what's going on.
How did it fail?
I posted a picture on the Mastodon. The error which showed up, the error was... state failed source exo player error code 2004 error message source error type error code IO bad HTTP status error cause Android X media 3.datasource.http/datasource $ invalid response code exception response code 402.
Well, yeah, you should get a 402 if you don't have a token, but you should have a token already.
I'm tokenless.
Daniel Matthews. See, Nathan says Daniel Matthews founded Podyssey. Okay, I'll respond. Thanks for linking this. I'll respond to this because I mean, he clearly has put a lot of work into this proposal here, but I think L402 is farther along.
Yeah,
it looks like Russell mentioned to him that he's going to send him the L402 secure RSS documents. I think we've already got implementations in multiple places of L402 support. So I'm really reluctant to try to build some new spec on this.
Mm.
So I think we should try to pull him into what's already happening rather than build a new spec.
Mm.
Hopefully Russell and Oscar can get the documentation for the current L402 up on the namespace, and we can just link him over there. it's a good idea. I like it.
The auth stuff or the L402?
No, the L402.
Yeah.
Just the whole idea of being able to, you know, pay for content right in the app. Somehow. Yeah, I like it. I think the problem right now is lack of public documentation.
Yeah.
And that's why I built that.
You were I saw that you were asking for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause we just have to be able to say, go here and look at the spec. Cause the L402 spec is not enough. You have to have what they're calling secure RSS. And I don't have a problem. People are like, some people are bothered by the name secure. It doesn't bother me. Like, I mean, it's marketing.
Exactly.
Sometimes, I mean, we call it pod ping.
Yeah, really.
I mean, it's really a blockchain message bus for podcast notifications, but that's hard to say. So we call it pod ping.
The domain name is unwieldy. You know, pod ping is much easier.
Yeah, secure RSS TM. So right. I think, you know, I don't have a problem with the name there. But it's, you know, all you're saying is it's just a shorthand to say the ability to buy paywalled content inside the feed. And I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, me neither. I'm okay with all versions. I know it works for me, but I'm okay with all versions of monetization. The more, and there's probably a few versions that haven't even been invented yet. People come up with.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, but value for value does seem to work, whether you're subscribed through Patreon or whatever. I mean, that does seem to work. I'm not sure if the guy, who are those guys making $1 million a month? That's a lot of money. $1 million a month. Are they on some kind of, is that like for exclusive content?
Because who are these guys?
I think is it Diary of a CEO? I'm thinking.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, that was a power.
Joe Budden.
Joe Budden. That's right. Oh, that's he is the podfather. They call him the podfather.
Is he called the podfather?
Yeah, I think so.
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know. I had never heard of Joe Budden until like a year ago.
Mm.
Whenever he dropped, everybody made a big deal because he got out of his Spotify contract.
Right.
I'm like, who is this? I'm like, I never even heard this person's name.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know who he is or how he makes $1 million a month.
Well, good for him.
If he's got it coming.
So how has it been getting back to the real world, getting back to the day job?
Difficult. I came back. I had like 1,700 emails in my inbox at work. Oh, I was like,
no.
Oh, it was crushing.
Give me an example. What were some of the tickets about?
Remote worker. My left monitor is blinking on and off. I'm like,
didn't you get to hire a guy who could do stuff for that? Or was he gone too?
Oh no, no, it's all, that's the thing is when, you know, when you're on a team or whatever, you come back and you have to sort through what's already been handled, what hasn't, you know, you have to kind of like, so every email is like a triage process where you have to go through and figure out, you know, and, you know, oh, this contract is coming up for renewal. Do you want this new version of this software? We still using this? It's just every email has to be touched and triaged. So, but I got caught up with that yesterday afternoon. So that's been good. Being out in the wilderness was
nice.
Amazing.
How long were you cut off from any connection?
About 6 days.
Wow. How did that feel?
Amazing. I was like, we started in June Lake, California and got on, we hiked about 9.5 miles in to connect with the John Muir Trail. And then, that was the first day. And then the next day we hiked over Donahue Pass. That was 11,000 feet. We had to hike through some snow, came down, into Yosemite wilderness. And then over the course of the next 4 days, we hiked, about 40 miles over to, Yosemite Valley and landed right there. It came out right there next to Curry Village.
Did you go into Curry Village?
We did not. We were going to go into Curry Village to get a shower because somebody told us the door code for the showers.
Hey, if you had just mentioned my name, you would have gotten a shower and a coffee.
Hey, do you know Adam? Yeah, he's my bro. How about that shower? How about you hook us up with that Wi-Fi password and the shower code?
You're too cheap to even go get the shower code, Dave, really?
Oh, yeah. No, see, there was two parts. This was our 25th wedding anniversary. So there was two parts to this trip.
There was certainly a luxurious suite part of the...
Yes.
Good.
There was the backcountry part and the bougie part. So we went backcountry to bougie. And nice. Like the first 6 days were hiking into Yosemite Valley. That was about 60 miles. And then the next 3 days were... lap of luxury at the Awani Lodge.
Nice. Good on you.
Yeah,
man.
We got the suite, you know, and all this stuff. So yeah, it was a great trip. It was amazing. Once you're out there in the wilderness for a while, like we got close enough to Yosemite Valley on day six in the afternoon, and I was like, I wonder if I have cell coverage. And so I turned off airplane mode because I'd kept it in airplane mode to keep the battery from dying.
Yeah.
So I took it off airplane mode. And then like 100 text messages start flowing in. I'm like, no, put it back on airplane mode. I don't want it.
Server down.
Yeah.
You know, you left without actually giving me access to reboot anything.
I know. I couldn't. I ran out of time.
I know. And you know, because you would give me a thing and I tried to connect it to my Linode account. It didn't work. And I said, well, try this. And you just left. I'm like, well, that's how God wants it. So God will keep it running. If not,
God or Dave,
whatever. One or the other.
Like, I worried about it the night before. And then I was like, that's fine.
Your stuff. The one thing I can say about Dave Jones, his stuff runs forever.
Stop. You son
I invite the boogeyman it. In.
Don't you dare.
Hey, let's thank some people, Dave.
Okay. All right. You got some, let's see, I've got PayPals and Boostergrams.
Yeah, I'll do the stuff that came in during the program, during the board meeting. NA Millennial was listening. Okay. NA Millennial's butt got warm when I was talking about him. 1776 Sats, thanks for the shout out. MMO is oftentimes described as a boomerless no agenda. I feel the love. Just kidding. All love. Listen to MMO live Tuesdays, 5:30 on the No Agenda stream. Okay. Martin Lindiskogue, 1776 Boostagram, freedom of expression. I'm having a conversation with Grok in Buy Me Coffee's Twitter X thread. All right, you need to step away.
What does that even mean?
Maybe I should ask about the funding tag and podcasting 2.0. Best premises, Martin. P.S. In Sweden, you can't decide regarding the state-owned television and radio, SVT, Sveriges Radio. They get funded by a public service fee levied as a tax on personal income. Is it time for new pirate radio and TV revolution? Yeah, well, that's what podcasting is. And Martin Lindiskogue, another 1776. Adam and Dave, I've missed you guys, and now I hear you talk about poop. Yes. Today,
the poop app.
The poop
go
app.
Go straight to the top of the leaderboard.
Today, I'm wearing Podcasting 2.0 certified t-shirt. Maybe I'll take a selfie and post it on the interwebs. I'm happy to be the number one super fan on True Fans of your podcast. All the best from Martin. Eric PP, 3333. Welcome back, he says. Boosting in from the Boost CLI. And we have, let me see, pre-boost, 4-7s from Dreb Scott. Pre-boosting the boost, listening live via Castomatic. Yes, indeed. Came in from Castomatic. Hoping you both had a great and relaxing break. Hashtag go podcasting. And yep. And I hit the delimiter. That's it.
Let's see. We got, did we get, just hit me that. My Castomatic didn't tell me that the bat signal went out.
I'm pretty sure I sent it.
Yeah, it's there. Okay.
It's there. Don't scare me.
False alarm.
Yeah.
False alarm. Look who we got. We got Buzzsprout came in here with $1,000.
Baller, shot caller, 20-inch blades on the Impala.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. That keeps everything running here. All yeah, boostograms, all donations, everything matters. It really evens out with some of our hosting supporters. Thank you, boys and girls.
And I went away and I came back to $1,000. Thanks guys. Thanks Kevin and Tom and the crew. And then guess who else came in?
Who?
Ben and Alberto at RSS.com with $777.
Oh, Paula,
nice.
Shot caller, 20-inch blades on the Impala.
That's thank you so much.
I should go to the woods more often.
Go away. Go away. Go, Dave. Go away.
We do better when I leave. Ben says, thank you for your consistent work, clear thinking, and steady commitment. Here's to open podcasting with RSS, the RSS.com team.
Thank you, RSS.com team. Much appreciated.
My RSS.com shirt is the ones that Ben's wife made.
I don't have one, funny
enough. On the vinyl application machine, it is... It is in bad shape.
It's peeling. It's peeling after a couple of washes. It starts to peel a bit.
I'm in need of a replacement RSS.
Is it kind of like the old t-shirt merch that you'd buy at the rock shows, and it would be just kind of almost like ironed on?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's like like the vinyl cut thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. we got a one off. One off from Shikozi Naji. For $20, and there's no note. Thank you, Shikozi.
Thank you, Shikozi.
And we got one from Francis Navilio for $10. Thank you, Francis. Appreciate that.
Let's see.
What do we got? We got boostograms somewhere in my inbox. Here we go. Oh, here we go. We got Bob Rathmel. 3,500 sats. Hey, Podverse.
That sounds like a new one, Bob Rathmel.
Never heard that name before.
You've been defragmented.
You're defragmented, Bob.
Dreb's kids just defragmented you. Through Podverse, 3,500 sats. He says, no need to read in the show. Okay, well, it anyway.
You got it done.
I'm excited to hear all the updates of your work. I had some trouble updating my Albi wallet to Boost. I'm sorry for the trouble, but you got it.
Seems like you got it, yeah. I guess. Some of the Albi wallets had problems. Some of their inbound liquidity failed or something.
Oh yeah. I think Chad F mentioned that.
Yeah, we had a node issue too.
Why did we have to reboot?
Because it's so fun to reboot a Bitcoin node.
Hours of reboot. Yeah.
Now, what happened was Randy Black. He set up his own node. He says, can you give me some liquidity? And I kept trying and I kept getting this error. Like you can't open a channel unless the node is fully synced to the chain. And so I, of course, blamed Randy. He said, yeah, your crappy setup. It's not synced to the chain. And then I go into Voltage because we have, you know, our big node is hosted by Voltage. All of your sats, everything is on that. And we provide liquidity. We have over 1,000 channels, by the way. We have quite a lot of
That's
channels.
That's ridiculous.
Open.
We have to be in near the top as far as channel count goes.
Channel count, maybe, but not liquidity, but count.
No,
anyway,
not liquidity.
And so I kept getting this problem. Then I go into Voltage into the dashboard, and our node is so big and so powerful that the dashboard never shows anything properly. But I see this flashing chain sync. I'm like, hey. So I ping Graham. Now, when you ping Graham on Signal, I don't care what time zone, what day or night it is. He is right away. You see the three dots coming up. What's going on?
Yeah, it could be 3 o'clock in the morning.
Anywhere. And he says, oh, what version are you on? I said, well, oh, yeah. He says, no, you're on older version. It's time to update. I'm like, oh, that means a reboot. Sinks. That means a reboot. And there's two parts to it. One, you got to reboot. You know, you have to hit update and it reboots. It doesn't really give you a great signal as to where it is, but he's right there in the back. I know I see it. It's all going fine. It's okay. And then the system, because Graham has no access to the node, the system will send me an email saying you have to unlock the node. And so you kind of like waiting on that. So that took several hours, but then it worked out and I was able to give all of this to say, I gave Randy some inbound liquidity.
Long way to go to get Randy some inbound.
It took two guys, several hours, but we got it done, Randy. You got your liquidity.
This stuff's ready for prime time, clearly. Yeah. What are we on the latest LND now?
Yeah, we are.
Okay. Yeah, because that, I mean, our node, how long does it take to reboot? Like
it went much,
7 hours?
No, it went much faster. I think it was okay. three and a half hours.
It used to be like 10.
Yeah. You know? Oh, 10 or 12 hours, what it used to be. Yeah. Right now we're on, let me see. I'll tell you what we're on. Well, it's also a new version of Voltage Cloud. You know, so it had to be all kinds of versions of stuff. Let me just check. Go to infrastructure owner. I'm the owner. Yes. Lightning nodes. Yes. Okay. We are on, let me see. Why doesn't it tell me what the, oh wait, node info. We're on 0.19.2-beta of LND.
Well, we're pretty recent then.
And I
wonder if that has the SQL stuff in it.
Because
you know, they're transitioning to a SQLite backend.
And I see that the voltage version already has an update. So I'm not going to do it. Not today,
no,
Satan.
No. Wait till Randy needs more.
Yeah. Well, it should work, I guess. But yeah, if it has a SQL backend, then that'll, I mean, your stats, your daily stats email has been broken for months.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't even work anymore. I switched it over to just be away from the full report to just like a balance.
Yeah.
Bruce, the ugly quacking duck, 2222 through Podcast Guru, says, "Bravo team on the images tag. Another win for podcasting. Enjoy the tech discussion on this episode. Thanks for all you do. 73s.
73s. Kilo 5 Alpha Charlie.
Hey, look who we have here.
Who do we have here, Dave?
Comic strip blogger 12915 through Fountain.
All right.
Comic strip blogger says, "Howdy, Dave and Adam. Are you missing MoFax with Adam Curry podcast? I have a replacement for you. So I have recommended this podcast to Adam Curry's Keeper podcast before. I knew that the president of France is suing her. So I recommend to her again here, a political podcast called Candace by Candace Owens. I'm not sure that she is always right, but she is very entertaining and presents a strongly Black American point of view, akin to Mo from Mo Facts, MoCSB."
I don't think it's exactly the same as Mo. Yeah,
very different. Very different.
Quite different, I would say. Yes, quite different. Thank you, CSB. And do we have anything else? Any monthlies?
Yeah, we got a lot of monthlies. Yeah. What happens when you're gone for half a month?
Yeah,
we got Podverse, $50. Thank you, Podverse.
Thank you, Podverse.
Basil Phillip, $25. Christopher Harabaric, $10. Mitch, that's Mitch Downey over at Podverse, $10. Terry Keller, $5. Chris Cowan, $5. Silicone Florist, $10. Derek J. Visker, the best name in podcasting, $21. Paul Saltzman, $22.22.
Uh-huh.
Damon Kasajak, $15. Jeremy Gerds, $5. Michael Hall, $5.50. New Media, that's Todd, $30. Gene Liverman, $5. Timothy Voice, $10. Lauren Ball, $24.22. Oystein Berha, $5. Jorge Hernandez, $5. Michael Goggin, $5. Cone Glotzbach, $5. Christopher Reamer, $10. James Sullivan, $10. And Jordan Dunville, $10.
Wow. Thank you all so much for supporting the Podcast Index. All funds go directly into the Podcast Index maintenance fund. Everything runs from that. All servers, everything, except the Mastodon. I contribute the Mastodon because I love everybody and I have all the power.
I control
everything, the node, etc., everything. We're so appreciative of that because people are now building. We are indirectly benefiting it. People are building on Podcast Index. It's a very important resource, and all of your contributions help keep that running. Go to podcastindex.org. Now at the bottom, there's a red donate button. If you hit on that, then you can send us your fiat fund coupons through PayPal. And of course, you can always boost. Boostagram goes into the node, and that just keeps getting more valuable, which is, you know, we have Podcast Index indeed has a Bitcoin treasury.
Oh,
we are just like MicroStrategy.
Yes, that's right.
We are the sailors of podcasting.
Michael Saylor. We're gonna leverage it for to do a float.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, that a SPAC, a reverse a SPAC. Merger.
yeah, we're gonna SPAC. Yeah,
do a SPAC.
Wrap it all up. We're gonna wrap everything up into a SPAC. Yeah.
So you sent me an ISO. Is that meant for the end of the show, or what was that meant for?
I was hoping you'd drop it in the middle of our public radio discussion. But
this is London Calling. We're listening to a news bulletin read in the overseas service of the BBC.
I actually forgot about it. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Thanks for the pre-production. As usual, anything we do before the show is forgotten or just is no good. That's how it always works.
It just falls on the floor.
We fly by the seat of our pants every single time. Brother Dave, good to have you back. I apologize. On Tuesday, we're going down to Florida. I'm speaking in front of the, what are they called? The embassy churches. I'm doing a talk with Pastor Jimmy.
What is it?
It's a group of churches, and they want to speak beyond the walls of the sanctuary. And so Pastor Jimmy and I are literally doing a talk on media, the church and media.
Your wheelhouse. Yes.
Yes. Two wheelhouses, actually. So, mm-hmm. And that will be promoting podcasting, obviously. And since everybody who's in church has a podcast now, they just don't know what to do with them or how. Right. I think we probably have to bring a lot. By the way, these would be good customers for HLS Video.
Ah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they need it because the amount of times I hear the story, well, YouTube took down the sermon again. You know, we got a strike, even though they all pay royalties for, you know, all kinds of music rights. That's not a bad idea. I'll probably bring that up with them. They probably don't know that you can do video, and that may be a good constituency to push RSS-based video into reality. So I will cool. bring that up there. Yeah, definitely. Nice. And you're just going to be going through support tickets?
Yeah, that's right. I'm hoping to work on, I need to go answer, this, post about secure RSS and purchasing content and that kind of thing. But I think I'm hopefully going to work on the new aggregator this week.
Ooh,
a little bit. Yeah. I need to get into that. It's been sitting on the table for too long, so I need
gathering
to make
dust,
progress on that.
Gathering dust, yeah, just sitting around,
it's gooey. Yeah. It's that thick dust from the server room that just gets all gooey.
Blow it off, you know? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, brother. Well, have yourself a great weekend, Dave. And
right, man, you too.
Thank you very much. Oystein Bergen standing by. He's coming up with his mutton mead and music. We'll be back here in 2 weeks on Podcasting 2.0. See you, boardroom.
Podcasts are cool.
You have been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.
Go podcasting!
You do you, boo.